So, Bob and Imo, finally. Only took like 3 weeks. I managed to catch Bobby pretty early. I caught it on its opening weekend in an audience filled with high school kids who may or may not have gotten the point of the film. Oppenheimer took a little longer given the lack of IMAX tickets anywhere in the city. It's been sold out across all the 4 to 5 screens that we have locally. And this is a time I really wished I was back at the Lincoln Center IMAX because it is one of 30 theaters in the world playing it the way it's meant to be played. But anyway, here are my thoughts on the Barbenheimer franchise on the Barbenheimer phenomenon, with a little bit of Rocky or Rani Ki Prem Kahani sprinkled in there, because in the midst of these two films, I managed to catch that as well. More on that halfway through the video. Now let's start at Barbie, right? Now, with this movie, I actually had a really great time. I don't quite know what the fuss was about. There have been plenty of discussions about how this is a pro-feminist film, which I don't really see the point of what's wrong with that, how it hates on men, it really doesn't hate on men. It, as a matter of fact, it kind of just shines a mirror on what modern-day society is like. I was very excited to see what Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach had cooked up together. Greta Gerwig has written, or rather is part of, one of my favorite films of all time, which is Frances Ha, about this girl trying to find her place in New York City, which I connect with very well when I happened to watch it a few years ago. And her and Noah Baumbach have worked in tandem. She made Little Women, which I quite liked. I wasn't a big fan of Lady Bird, but it did receive critical acclaim from all spaces when it did release. So this is clearly, this movie is riding on the coattails of some people that are clearly very talented and they know what to do. Now, did I enjoy the film? Like I mentioned, I did. But it's not to say it's not got its problems. I think the film's, at least the first 45 minutes to 1 hour of this movie, is absolute perfection. And some of the references and some of the metaphors, I would like to admit I kind of missed when I was watching the film. And I came out of the movie theater and I asked the friends I was with, and they pointed out to me what the film was trying to convey, and it blew my mind. The one issue that I have with this film is what many consider to be the strong point of this film, that is America Ferrera's monologue at the end of the film. It's not that the content of the monologue is bad, it's not that what she's saying is wrong or has no place being where it's supposed to be. It uses a trope that I don't quite like in films, where it essentially pauses the entire film to deliver the message to the audience via delivering it to another character on the screen, this time stereotypical Barbie. This is a trope famously used in a lot of nationalist films, a lot of films starring certain actors who keep churning out movies every 3 to 4 months, where they all but pause the movie to talk about how great the country is and whatnot. I mean, I guess the country is great. It's all wonderful. You've been telling this to me through the story over the last couple of hours. We don't need to pause the film to understand what point you're trying to make. I just think it's catering to the lowest form or the lowest base when it comes to your audience, and I don't think this movie needed to do that. Another thing that I had an issue with towards the end of the film is Mattel wiping their hands off any of the blame for the issues that they have caused in the past. Now, I would assume that this would be coming, given that no matter what side of the fence you fall on, men, women, woke, anti-woke, who gives a shit, ultimately capitalism governs all, right? I mean, that's the lay of the land. And there is a thing that happens towards the end of this film with which for me, I think personally felt like was a directive from Mattel, and it just didn't sit well with me. I think when you do go watch the film, if you have watched the film, you'll understand what I'm trying to talk about. It felt a bit disingenuous. I wasn't a particularly a big fan of the of that bit. That being said, I really think you should go check the film out. It's got some great performances. Ryan Gosling is the standout once again, like he is in most films. I think his portrayal of Ken, or the arc that Ken gets in this movie, is kind of remarkable. It's he really has some insane character development that takes place throughout the course of this film, and I was very surprised that he was the one that got the most spotlight to shine in. It's a great tribute to Matchbox 20. I mean, pushes all over Spotify streaming charts at this point. It's a great joke in there as well. I recommend that you go check it out. It's not perfect. I think it, like I said, it does get a bit heavy-handed towards the end, but is it worth checking out? 100%. I highly recommend that you do. Now, I'll get to Oppenheimer towards the end because I kind of want to take a few minutes to talk about the local entry, so to speak, in this little trilogy of films that I saw over the last 3 weeks, and that being Rocky Aur Rani Ki Prem Kahani. Now, this is a return for Karan Johar after what, 7 years be after being out of the spotlight in the director's chair. He last directed the terribly received, not terribly received, the controversial Ae Dil Hai Mushkil, which made no sense back then. When it comes to the controversy, neither does the plot make any sense, and the justification of the plot by the director further makes things worse. So it's a movie I don't quite enjoy. I love the music, much like the rest of the continent, but it's not a great movie, and I think even Karan Johar might kind of accept it. He returns to form in this one in a huge commercial vehicle starring Ranveer Singh and Alia Bhatt about two people who come from very different worlds who fall in love with each other, but obviously there's an issue of families not gelling because in India you don't marry the person, you marry the family. And this film explores those dynamics and takes the audience down a bit of a roller coaster ride as you progress your way through the film. Did I like it? Yeah, it did what it said it would do on the box. It's a film that's low on substance, high on style, swings for the fences, has a loud, boisterous cast with a loud, boisterous story, and it does a pretty good job of doing what it's intended to do. Now, the two lead characters have great chemistry. We last saw them in Gully Boy. Ranveer Singh, you know, can play the obnoxious, loud character very well, and he does that to a T here. Alia Bhatt matches him as Rani, and her character has her own shifting views throughout the film, and you could say possibly is the centerpiece around which the film is built. So it's up on Alia's dependable shoulders to carry the film, and she most certainly does. Jaya Bachchan is also in this movie as like the wicked grandmother who's trying to keep their family together, but at the cost of their soul and their humanity. So there's a whole it's your standard trope of characters that have been around the block for several years, all repackaged and repurposed for the modern day audience. I'd recommend you go check it out if you want something that's light, breezy, and something you don't really have to think or challenge yourself intellectually once the credits have rolled. It's commercial cinema at its most fun. I recommend that you go check the film out. Now, speaking of intellectual films, let's get to Oppenheimer. So my big issue with Christopher Nolan for over a decade at this point is the fact that he doesn't create characters that have any warmth or personal relationships with the audience or with the other characters on screen. Since the TDKR days, where I felt like it was the coldest entry in the franchise, where one didn't really care for Batman. Now, I've been a Batman fan all my life. There's a big episode on it on our podcast, which you can go check out. And it was the film, the only Batman movie where I didn't care about what happened to the character. And the character goes through several traumatic incidents in the film. It's the treatment of these characters that just gets progressively worse, and we get to Interstellar, a movie that's built on love, being able to cross the space-time continuum. But I don't buy it because his relationships are so cold and so distant. And the same continues with Dunkirk, where you're supposed to care for a battalion of soldiers stranded on an island, surely on a suicide mission, but there's no connection with those characters at all. As a matter of fact, I connected more with the characters from 1917 than I did with any of the characters in Dunkirk. And you may argue that 1917 is a bit of a gimmicky film, a film that relies heavily on the one shot. It does not take away from the fact that the two lead characters in the film are the heart and soul of that movie. And in Dunkirk, with Barry Keoghan, and you have Harry Styles and Kenneth Branagh, none of these characters ever had any sort of emotional depth to them. And I think that is one of Christopher Nolan's biggest flaws. The less said about Tenet, the better. It is my least favorite Christopher Nolan film. I don't particularly enjoy it, and it annoyed the hell out of me, given that it was the first film I saw as soon as restrictions were lifted post-pandemic. So let's not get into that, but let's get into Oppenheimer. So in the first 25 to 30 minutes of this film, some of my fears about building those emotionally deep characters definitely came to the surface because Oppenheimer's relationship with his future wife and then his lover, played by Florence Pugh, don't really have any sort of emotional depth, like much like Nolan's other characters. As a matter of fact, I think Florence Pugh is absolutely wasted in the film. I don't for a second buy her relationship with Oppenheimer, why she's so invested, why she keeps coming back to him, why they keep sleeping together. And I felt the same way about Emily Blunt's character for a long time in the movie, until the second half, where she really pulls from the script to deliver a great performance and establish that relationship between her husband, that conflicted relationship, where they're at each other's throats, but they also love each other and they have a deep understanding. I think a lot of credit goes to Mrs. Blunt for figuring out how best to portray that character, and she does a wonderful job. I also loved Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer in the film, a man conflicted with representing science in the modern world while also understanding the repercussions of his actions. I thought Robert Downey Jr.'s Louis Strauss was also an exceptionally well-written character. And General Gross, played by Matt Damon, is much more likable and tolerable this time around than his character in Interstellar, which I absolutely detested. This is a movie that absolutely takes off once it gets going and doesn't let go right until the end. The biggest compliment that I can give this film is that I can compare it to one of my favorite films from the 2010s, that is The Social Network, directed by David Fincher. Now, if you know me, you know how much I love The Social Network. I think it's a near-perfect film that I rewatch every single year, or I have rewatched every single year since its release in 2010. This borrows a lot of elements in The Social Network, but does so and conveys it in Christopher Nolan's traditional style. When the movie gets going, when the court drama eventually takes center stage post the atomic bomb detonation and the repercussions that come with it, this film had me hooked. I was really intrigued to see where the movie was going, what issues Oppenheimer was going to have. As a matter of fact, I found a lot of similarities with another film, that is The Imitation Game, where a government used a brilliant mind to get something they needed and then disposed of them the moment they were done. A lot of similarities with a lot of great films. This is a movie that's 3 hours long that does not feel 3 hours long. It's wonderfully directed. I think it's a return to form personally for Christopher Nolan after a 13-year break for me. Since Inception, I haven't enjoyed a Christopher Nolan film as much as I enjoyed this. As a matter of fact, these kind of movies are my jam. I love courtroom dramas. I love talkie films. I love movies where characters push the narrative as opposed to the narrative pushing the characters. This movie does it in spades and has a wonderful score from Ludwig Göransson and beautiful cinematography from the wonderful Hoyt van Hoytema. He might have given himself radiation while filming a nuclear blast, but it looks wonderful on screen. Now, the only regret I have for this film, like I mentioned earlier on in the review, is that I was unable to see it in the 70mm IMAX format that it's meant to be presented in, because it's only available in 30 theaters across the world. Now, if you happen to be in a city where one of these theaters are situated, I highly recommend that you go check it out because it deserves the big screen treatment. This is a movie I think requires several rewatches. I am sure I've missed a bunch of things, and I'm definitely going to go back and watch it again a second time when I do have some time. If you're watching this movie for the first time, here are a few things I think you should know, or rather kind of read up on a little bit to make things easier for you to understand during the course of the film. Read up on McCarthyism, the general fear of the Soviets and communism as a whole concept. Read up on nuclear fission and fusion. The movie is split into two parts, fission and fusion. I think the fusion part of the film is the color part of the film, which is subjective, and the fission part is in black and white, which is objective, which is what happened, and the subjective part of the film is slightly fictitious in nature. It was quite funny watching these high schoolers or like early 20-somethings discussing fusion and fission outside the movie theater, not quite understanding the difference. And it can be a little confusing. It can be a little overbearing at times because it throws a lot of quantum physics at you. It throws a lot of communism fears at you. And in the middle of all of this, there's a courtroom drama and an atomic bomb being blown up. So it can be a lot. But if you have a small enough understanding of what these topics are, it greatly benefits your viewing experience because you don't for a second get stuck with the narrative. You're not trying to catch up with the film, which I feel is an issue that a lot of people had while watching this film. So that's the only thing I'd recommend that you check out. Personally, for me, I had some sort of information on the topics this film was discussing before, so it was a lot easier for me to get on board. But I would totally understand if it's some of these conversations kind of go above your head. So just a little bit of homework before you go watch the film. Trust me, it makes the entire experience a lot better. Would I recommend you go watch Oppenheimer 100%? I mean, I don't even think I need to recommend it, given it's a Christopher Nolan film and we know the mania that accompanies each release. The fact that I am reviewing this film 2 weeks into its release purely because I've been unable to get tickets for it for the last 2.5 weeks rings volumes about how successful this film is. As a matter of fact, both Barbie and Oppenheimer have kind of demolished box office records in a summer where a lot of tentpole films have collapsed. Mission Impossible, I don't know what the release strategy was. It's a film I disliked but did quite well, was received critically as well. Flash, the less said the better. Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse did remotely well. Indiana Jones is probably one of the biggest flops of the summer, if not the decade. So it's good to see that these two diametrically opposite films that released on the same day are doing so well. I think Warner Brothers would have liked to have Christopher Nolan's films on board as well, but I guess Barbie hitting $1 billion next week will do enough to clean those wounds. But yeah, I don't see the point in comparing these two films because there is nothing to compare between the two of them. I think they both make for really fun experiences. As a matter of fact, I throw Rocky and Ronnie in there as well for good measure, because then you have a melting pot, or as we like to call, a nice kitchedy of movies that you can go check out if you haven't already. I would recommend the Rockenheimer experience, given that I did end up watching these films over the period of 12 hours or 12 to 14 hours apart. But if you have pick your two, pick your Barbenheimers or pick your Rockenheimers or pick your Barberani, I guess. Whatever, like the three really good films. 2.5 really good films in the box office at this point. I kind of wanted to make a small episode for you guys before we get back into our regular schedule of podcasting. And we'll have more guests, and I'm sure this is probably not the last time I will be speaking to you about Barbenheimer. The next time I do, I'll have a guest on board as well, and hopefully we'll take things forward from then. Please do like, follow, subscribe, whatever you're listening to or watching this on. It really benefits us, it really benefits the channel. It would do us a world of good. Thank you and have a beautiful day.